You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Gordon Brand Jr.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Jon Rahm claimed a Rolex Series hat-trick with a stunning victory at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open.
I'm thrilled to be able to be an Irish Open champion again for the second year and join the likes of Sebi. I think he won it three times, and to be the second Spaniard to win it more than once. It's a lot of pride to take on that, and I'm honoured.
The Spaniard held off the challenge from Austria's Bernd Wiesberger and England's Andy Sullivan.
Buzzing with the number, wasn't vintage today by any means, just managed to get it round. The number really stuck in there well mentally, was very, very good today. Not my best, but I was really happy to come off with the score that I did and to finish where I am at the moment.
All the reaction to come from Ireland, plus we'll look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Aberdeen Standard Investments Scottish Open. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined by former European Tour winner and current European Tour senior player, Gordon Brand Jr. Gordon, hello.
Good morning, Robert.
And Golfing World's Jack Hayward. Jack, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Well, let's start.
Let's go.
Let's start with the venue itself, La Hinch. How good did that look on television?
Well, I mean, one of these golf courses we don't really know. Not many golf tournaments have been played there. I mean, of course, you go to Ireland, all the venues are fabulous, but this La Hinch was absolutely fantastic. The only thing with links golf courses is they are tend to be vulnerable to low scoring. If it doesn't blow,
sure,
and it doesn't get fierce. And we saw some very low scoring this week.
Jack, are you a links man?
Yeah, love a bit of links.
Would that be your favourite form of the game?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And I mean, we Brits are predisposed to sort of saying that, but not everybody feels that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. I think even when you look at the kind of like non-classical links around the world, things like Pebble Beach, coastal golf just gets everyone incredibly excited, I think. So, yeah, for me, links is the purest form and the best form.
Yeah.
And most enjoyable to watch on television as
well.
I
think so. I'm with you 1,000%. So, Jon Rahm came in as the tournament favourite, Gordon, and he had a lot to do when he teed off in the last round.
Well, he had a lot to do. The first few days he played well, but just the putts weren't dropping and he was five behind going in the last day, but really stormed through with 62, and the people in the lead were just dropping away. Couldn't match Rahm 62. Had a little error on 18, but got the job done. Won by two shots.
John was interviewed. You know, there's in-course interviews during the week, and he said how much he loved the knowledge of the Irish crowd. He said all the right things. The atmosphere, the golf courses are great. Does, even if you don't believe that 100%, you saying that help you get the job done in the end? Anything that's positive, does that push you over the line?
Yeah, I believe so. I think, positive self-talk never hurt anybody, I don't think. And particularly someone like Jon Rahm, who we've seen can get incredibly down on himself as well. He's both ends of the extreme. So, I think for someone like him to kind of be able to kind of talk himself out of a funk and to immediately bounce back from any error out on the golf course, it's a huge advantage for him.
He was in the shake-up, Gordon, yesterday on the back nine, playing slightly ahead of the last pairings, and then he had a long iron to knock it on the par 4 13th, which he missed pin high left, but had a little avenue through two bunkers to get to the pin. He made a bit of a mess of it and bogeyed it. That might, for another player, have been that. How about the comeback?
Well, but I mean, he's won the event. That's his second time he's won the event. So
different course, though.
But he still is a hardened pro, but I mean, stood on 15, hit the shot of the day, didn't he? Really did stamp his authority back there. He didn't let that hiccup upset himself. I mean, talking about the talk, you go to a golf course, and if you don't enjoy the venue, it's tough not to go to Ireland and not enjoy Ireland.
But you must have played courses where you went, played horribly, and you thought, I hate this place. And then all of a sudden, you go back one year, you play great, you think, oh, you're doing well, this is not bad.
Well, you're dead right. We always used to play in Germany, and it was just an open field to me, and it looked like the bombers could get over the trap that I couldn't get over. And I thought, well, how do I ever play this golf course? And then one year I went back and I just played properly and finished second. And you think, why do you go to a golf course with that attitude when you know if you just actually go and play proper golf, doesn't matter how the golf course is formed, you can have a good finish. So, you know, talking about self-talk, get in there. Jon Rahm's won the event, enjoy Ireland, and so he's upping himself before. So he's going to enjoy the environment, so he's got a great chance of enjoying his golf as well.
I mean, you went Germany, bombers. I thought you were going World War II there. That's why I was cracking up that night. Moving right along. Long hitters.
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
How good a player is Jon Rahm?
Spectacularly good. He's got everything, hasn't he? It's not just... You definitely would categorise him as a bomber, to use that bit of terminology again. but it's unfair to just call him a bomber. He isn't someone who just puts it out there. The accuracy off the tee is absolutely fantastic as well, and that is the real key to his success. But he also, when he's on the money, like he was over the weekend, rolling in the putts left, right and centre, fantastic touch around the greens, the famous Spanish hands. He's got a bit of everything about him, John.
Do you like his passion?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, golf would be pretty boring without characters like him and Tyrrell Hatton and people like that who really
want
to rip the course apart. So
strangle the course.
Fully on board.
And you know, when you look at Rahm, there's a bit of Seve in there and there's a bit of Sergio in there. He's kind of a mixture of all those guys put together.
He's just got everything you want. Very strong guy. Bombs it out there. And then it's also around the greens and on the greens. He's absolutely wonderful. The touch. And also, he's not one-dimensional
That's
player.
Very true.
You can see him playing shots. And, of course, he's going to love a links course where it actually asks an awful lot of your skills.
Robert Rock had the round of the week with an amazing 60, 59 watch, which I don't think when people got to Lahinch, anyone was sort of thinking there might be a 59 around here. But he played some unbelievable golf.
Yeah, that back nine in particular, it was the putting. I think when we think of Robert Rock and him playing at his best, you kind of think of a stripe show, don't you, with that fantastic, incredible trademark golf swing of his, like kind of really old school Ben Hogan-esque golf swing. But it was just the putting on the back nine on Saturday was absolutely ridiculous. He held, I think, it was six birdies and six holes at the end of the round. The first four of those were from about 10 to 15 foot, so not tap-ins by any means.
No.
And then it was 30 foot, and then on 17, was it 17, he held the 50-footer across the green? Just incredible rolling of that rock. It was, phenomenal stuff.
Nice work with the rock there.
18 as well. I mean, he did have a 30-footer that only just missed the hole for 59. But as we said earlier, that golf courses, links golf course, if there's not a breeze, it's vulnerable to these wonderful players.
But people always say, well, he shot 60, didn't half hole some putts. Well, yeah.
What are you meant to do?
That's
you
right, exactly.
Take the magic pencil.
Two putt every green and shoot 60.
Take the magic pencil.
Absolutely not. No, he played some incredible golf, Robert Rock.
There was a nice little quirk as well, actually. His caddy, Gary Tilston, is the twin brother of Oliver Fisher's caddy, who, of course, got the first 59. Who's Guy Tilston?
Yeah, there you go.
Could have been two Tilstons. Tilston
won two.
59,
which
is pretty cool.
Owning the two caddies, the two twins owning the only two 59s on tour at the moment.
Yeah, well, would have been so close.
That's true. Fantastic goal from John Rahm. We have to talk about Rafa Cabrera-Bello because he looked to be in great shape heading into the back nine if he produced the golf that he can. But again, he didn't.
Well, he was being sort of chased down, wasn't he? Rahm was chasing him down in the front nine. But, I mean, Bello, unfortunately, the back nine, four bogeys and two birdies, just doesn't do it on a Sunday at a major championship with some class golfers chasing you down. He doesn't manage to finish.
He
doesn't finish a meal, does he? He just is not a great closer where... It's quite difficult when you go out with a lead or you're in and he was three shots ahead after 10 holes and then it just doesn't happen. Yeah, what stops him? Is it his mental attitude or does nerves take over?
It's definitely mental, definitely mental. I mean, you look at him play when he's in full flow and you think, well, this guy's a player.
Yeah, so he's obviously intimidated by this situation, someone chasing him down and
I think in the end there's just not quite enough self-belief. I just don't think he quite believes it enough because we've seen him so many times in a great position and even if you took an average amount of times you would finish, he's behind that.
How does he change it?
How does he flatten out the curve?
It's difficult to say because, again, he's a player who you'd say he's got everything. He's got an incredible physique. He hits the ball. It's not John Rahm length, but he's pretty accurate and pretty long off the tee.
He puts it out there.
And at his best, he's pretty fluent with the short game as well. It's something between the ears. As we know, it's the most important part of golf. You look at someone like Jordan Spieth in the last few years, who I know he's had his struggles in the last kind of year, 2 years, but at his absolute pomp, the golf swing was pretty ugly still, to be honest. The ball striking wasn't quite up there with the very best in the world, but just his incredible mental resolve got him across the line for that Open Championship at Birkdale when he was completely rocking and on the ropes. And so many times we saw how his mental resolve got him across the line, and Rafa's just the complete opposite
but
of that.
When Spieth was doing all this stuff, he I know you could look at his swing and say it's not as pretty as Rory's or not as good as Adam Scott's or whatever, but what he did was he played golf and he worked out how to play golf. Now he's playing golf swings and it's not the same guy.
I think as also Spieth relished the challenge of having an opportunity to win the golf tournament, which is massive. A lot of players almost dread the challenge of winning
the golf
He's happy to put his head on the block and get it chopped off, but he looks at it as a massive challenge to win a golf tournament, where I think some of them would maybe just back off a bit. I mean, you cannot have four bogeys and two birdies on the back nine
that's
on
not
Sunday.
Do it.
It's not going to do it.
No.
So, as you say, there's something missing there. You say he's got it all. There is something missing there.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's probably more of a, you know,
he knows.
The persona of him, how he looks, how he swings the golf
club. Rafa knows.
We've seen a million players like that. But do they get the job done?
We're hearing lots of people use the word killer for someone like Brooks Koepka at the moment. And when he gets into the major mentality, he just wants to. He relishes winning that golf tournament. Rafa is the complete opposite. I think John Rahm is another man who really loves the big occasion. We've seen that now with 8 Rolex Series events, 3 wins, 3 top 5s, a top 10 and a top 15, and that's not a bad record, is it?
Next year, Brooks Koepka's just going to play. He's going to have a four tournament schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
He might as well. He might as well. He's finished miles down there again.
Well, Rahm's only played 34 times in Europe and he's won 4 times.
Yeah. 75 times worldwide and 6 wins.
Parachuted in last year to Madrid and won that.
Well, there you go.
He's won another Irish Open, another Rolex Series event. Let's hear from the man who must be very happy, the Irish Open champion, John Rahm.
It's been a really good week. Every time I come, it's one of my favorite weeks all year. I've said it all week. I love the people of Ireland. I love the country of Ireland. I love Lahinch, people of Lahinch, and the golf course. The support is unbelievable. So every time I come, it's like being at home. So I'm thrilled to be able to be a Irish Open champion again for the second year and join the likes of Seve. You know, I think he won it 3 times, and to be the second Spaniard to win it more than once. It's a lot of pride to take on that, and I'm honoured.
Got an eagle on the card today. Unlucky chip on the hole afterwards, but you responded with 2 birdies. How important was the mental game today?
Very. I mean, it was very easy to just get too confident after an eagle like that and having a drivable hole. And I was fully aware. I just, you know, I wanted to make an aggressive swing. I pulled it a little bit. It was a stretch to get my iron there, but I needed to. And I ended up in a bad spot. Tricky lie, a little bit of grass behind it. It could jump out of there or it could come up soft. Came out soft. It is what it is. Maybe I should have been a little bit more aggressive and take 20, 30 feet past the pin for a birdie. But still, sometimes there's necessary bogeys in golf. And, you know, that kind of got me back on the train of thought of, hey, you need to keep making birdies. Made a great birdie on 14 and saw myself on the lead. So after that, I was just, you know, trying to keep the mindset of I'm still one back. I still was trying to get to 15 under, but never thought I was going to get to 16 without birdie and 18. So it was a lot better golf than I thought I was going to play at the end.
Let's hear some social media reaction. Matt Wallace said, I thoroughly enjoyed Lahinch. Great work, Paul McGinley, in the European Tour. Happy with my progress. Paul McGinley, who did an unbelievable job, said, wow, there's nothing else to say except thank you to Ireland and our people. Eddie Pepperell, thanks to McGinley Golf for hosting another wonderful DDF Irish Open. Disappointed not to do better today, but great stuff from John Rahm. On to Scotland now for another cracker. So, I mean, everybody went there and came away from Lahinch thinking it was a brilliant week.
The crowds are knowledgeable. The golf courses generally are fantastic as well. The welcome you get there is second to none.
And the golf course, a bit like Kronos, a bit like St Andrews, pretty much finishes right in the town. The crack in the town apparently was unbelievable for the whole week. And it's not, Ireland is not weather dependent. You know, a lot of places, if it's a good week this week with the sunshine, it'll be busy. It was rammed. I wish I'd have gone. I wanted to go. I'm actually going to go to Lahinch in September. I'm going to go across and play the golf course. Okay. Just for the hell of it.
Very nice. Robert.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's hear from Andy Sullivan, who, because he tied second, was happy with his score, but he was still disappointed with aspects of his final round.
Buzzing with the number. Wasn't vintage today by any means. Just managed to get it round. A number really stuck in there well mentally. Was very, very good today. Chipped and putted it round really nicely. So, you know, not my best, but I was really happy to come off with the score that I did and to finish where I am at the moment.
You mentioned yesterday that you've had a few changes to equipment, etc., to get more control of the ball. Seems to be working well for you now.
Yeah, it is getting better, I must admit. It's starting to come back to when I was playing my best in 2015. So hopefully more of the same trend in that way and can get my hands on a trophy eventually.
What would you say was the biggest test out there today? You said you weren't that happy.
You know, me keeping my head on mentally, really. Today I didn't hit many fairways at all, so then it's difficult to make birdies out there, but somehow managed to carve a few out from that. So I'd say just mentally I was very good today, kept my head on there and, you know, managed to keep myself in the game somehow.
You've already qualified for the Open. How important is it to get this, or how valuable is it to get this links experience prior?
Definitely, you know, you just can't get enough of it leading up to the Open, I don't think. You know, the little shots you play around the greens and stuff, you just need to familiarise yourself with that. The more you do that, the more easy it becomes at the Open. I'm sure the Irish weather won't be as kind at the Open as it has been this week, but it's been a good week for prep for the Open.
He was very successful with playing a predominantly a fade game, and then he got somehow lost somewhere and he's gone back to the fade. Why do players do it, Gordon? They have success and then they make changes or tweaks or whatever, and then they fall off the edge that they had.
Well, it's a terrible thing, isn't it? Because as good as Andy Sullen was, as he said, he played his best in 2:15, we strive to be better. And so with this little drop fade that he played, which gave him great success, he probably thought, I need maybe to play a draw, maybe to get a bit more length or something. He's striving for something that he doesn't need to do it. You know, he needs to maybe manage his game better. He doesn't need to change his game. He was very successful in 2:15, but unfortunately, a lot of players make a major error of actually trying to change the shape of the shot that is a natural shot for them to think they will improve. Look at Keimer. He was a fader all the time, decided to try and draw. It went off the planet, didn't he?
That's a great example, actually, because, you know, just because Augusta was coming up, he decided to try and hit a draw when he was a stock fader. Nicholas faded it, won six Masters.
Well, you had Trevino, one of the greatest players ever, just realised he couldn't hit a high draw and he was never going to win the Masters. But he didn't try to change his game for 1 week. And I do think there is a thing with golfers, and we always strive and we see great golfers in front of us and I wish I had that.
It's
shot.
Like the sweet shop, isn't it? The temptation is there all the time to think, oh, add a bit of that to my game, exponentially I'm going to improve. Sometimes exponentially you nosedive, you go the other way.
Well, I would say 99.9% of the time it goes downhill. And instead of actually looking at the results and saying, well, I don't need to change my game, what do I need to change to actually become much better? And more often than not, it's mentally strength, it's actually ability to believe that you're going to win. But we'll go back to the technical stuff and think, well, I need to change that.
Very good, Gordon. Very well put. Andy Sullivan, one of three players, Jack, who earned his stripes to get to Northern Ireland in, well, a little over a week's time now. How much of that do you think was in the players' minds coming down the stretch once they realised they probably couldn't win to try and close out one of those precious spots?
I think you never know in terms of the win as well. I think when you've got someone like John Rahm front running, he's a fantastic front runner, but he is also, as we've seen, susceptible to mistakes. So I think they were still hanging around and hoping for the victory. Even I think I heard Paul Waring mention in his post-round interview that he was still kind of eyeing up the win as well. He wasn't just looking for the open spot. But I think that is it certainly can't hurt to have that kind of extra bit of motivation.
And I just reflect back 7 days prior when Alvaro Quiroz, with three spots available in Spain, who finished second, and he didn't get one of those spots. Mm. How unlucky is that?
Yeah.
You think if I finish second, I'm wrapping up one of three spots, and you can finish second and not get one.
Well, how come if there's three spots in the
So Bezaden had one, right? Yeah. And there was a five-way tie for second.
Oh, my God. Oh,
and right. Other players had higher world rankings than him. So,
and particularly at Valderrama with the difficulty of that golf course.
And he shot four or five under the last round, yeah. Alvaro Quiroz. I think he shot 66 around there, which is a pretty good knock at Valderrama.
Oh, yeah, just a bit. I think with all these, you know, an open place, and as you say, that there's people that are struggling to make their card, that has to be secondary because you've got to go out and perform. You can't perform with that in mind. It's very much like, well, I'm leading the tournament by three shots. Do you start looking forward, well, I'm going to pick up the trophy, I'm going to win this? You've got a job to do on Sunday. And I think the less you think about it, the better chance you have of performing.
But you would have an idea. We're going to find out in a minute from Paul Waring. But you would have an idea coming down the stretch, looking at the leaderboard, and you'll know he's exempt, he's exempt, he's not, he's not. You can work out where you are. I'm just wondering at what point that kicks in.
Well, I suppose there's players that don't leaderboard look, don't they?
And you go, well, they should just stay home.
Why wouldn't you look at the leaderboard?
You don't look at leaderboard, you faked it. Stay home.
You stand on 18, it's a par 5, and you need a 4 to win, and you don't know. And you think, well, I don't fancy this par 5, I'll just play it as a par 5. Well, actually, that's ridiculous. You know, play to win. So, you know, you need to know where you are. So, as you say, these guys will be very much aware who's qualifying, who's getting close to qualifying.
Let's find out.
You know, so if I need to make a 4 on 18, well, do we have a go at it or do we protect where we are? You've got to make a decision, haven't you?
That's exactly right. Yep. Paul Waring, you must be on the phone listening to this tripe.
I am indeed.
How are you?
How are you all? I'm very well, thank you. Got in a bit late last night after Ireland. We got a bit delayed. Likewise, so I've had a coffee, I've warmed my voice up, so I'm happy to speak to you guys now.
So it was a very good week for you. You must be pleased.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoy Links Golf, and the Irish crowd as well have been fantastic. Every time we go over there, they really embrace what's going on. And, you know, the atmosphere around the place was just electrifying, really. Great little party town. And, you know, just enjoyed the week. Yeah, it was fantastic.
I just wonder, Paul, how validating is it for you and your methods that you've managed to produce, not just last week, but over the last year, some of the very best golf of your life?
I've said to a few people that I'd taken a bit more time off and played a little bit less and just tried to concentrate more on the actual tournaments that I was going to go and play in. And I think from the results, you can kind of see that, where I've had, you know, quite a few top 10s. I haven't given myself a chance to win yet, which is a little bit frustrating. But, you know, I've been playing some really good golf because I think I've had the time off in between to work at my game and keep myself in a good place. So, you know, I'm glad that my little idea of what I wanted to do is actually, you know, working out well.
That's interesting what you said is taking your time in playing less. Does that mean that you don't get tired and your preparation is better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you go week to week, this is very personal, you know, everyone's different, and there's other players that'll turn around and say, no, I've got to play 3 weeks in a row because by the third week I feel sharp.
Yeah.
It's completely different for me, where I feel like I can become sharp, I can get better while I'm at home. I've got the time and the space and the energy to do it. And then when I've come out on a Monday or Tuesday, I feel like I'm ready to perform for that week. Then I'm not on a range on Tuesday and Wednesday chasing my tail. I think I had a little look around at what some of the other players do, and it sounds a bit funny, but you look at the world's top 50, and they're not always on a range, beating balls. You know, they're turning up, playing pro-am, then going out and performing. You know, that, and that kind of says a lot to me. You speak to some of them, and I think John Rahm even said it, where he was like, I do all my work away and I come to perform, and that kind of sort of stuck with me, really.
Paul, down the stretch, the agenda of winning the Irish Open, that was huge, of course. It's a Rolex Series event, but also there's an agenda in these few tournaments to get a spot at the Open. How aware of you were you of your position in that?
My caddy attends me on 80. I was actually walking in, well, we were kind of reading the putt, and I actually said to him, I'll have a little run at this, you know, may as well try and pick three and see where I... And he actually turned to me and said, no, it's all right, four will do. You know, it was kind of like he'd been keeping his eye on it so much throughout the day. He'd had it all calculated that, obviously, I was so into my golf game, I was trying to shoot the lowest score possible. But he knew that, hang on, four is actually good enough for an open tour. We can't win a golf tournament. The last thing we want to do is go and make five because you've chased it. An eagle putt, just calm down, take a breath type thing, and just get the job done. So I think it's a bit of, I was having a good look and he was having a proper look at it. He knew exactly where we were.
You've played at Portrush before, haven't you, Paul? I wonder what your memories are of playing there and how much you think it'll differ now. Obviously, there's been a lot of much publicised kind of course changes there. How do you think it will differ to your past experiences of playing there?
I'm not too sure. In total, actually, the last time I was there, me and my caddy actually compared it to a mini open. That's the atmosphere that was there. We got out of the airport, we got in the car, we drove over to the golf course. I remember coming over a hill. This is on a Tuesday morning, the normal practice day. And you come over the hill and there were just crowds and crowds of people there. And this for a Tuesday practice. And we were just like, wow, what is going on here? So again, the atmosphere there was just unbelievable. So I can't wait to see what it's going to be like. Obviously, for an open week, everything's turned up to 11 for a major. So it'll be really interesting to see it. The golf course wise, again, it suited my eye back in 2012, I think it was, Irish Open when we played there. I think I finished top 10. I actually gave myself a pretty decent chance. Didn't play great on Saturday. So again, it did suit my eye when I played it. Obviously, we've got two new holes in there now. They've got rid of the old 17 and 18. So it'll be interesting to see how they play when we get over there.
Paul, listen, thank you very much for spending time with three men having a row. That's our little show here. Really well played. I'm delighted that you're going to the Open Championship. And, of course, you know it's going to be a thrill. It'll be packed to the rafters.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate that.
Great stuff, Paul. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Bye-bye, Paul.
Good to hear from Paul Waring. And he played in the Sixes recently. And some of his wedge play, I think he did play with Tom Lewis. The pair of them were going toe-to-toe and they were playing greensomes. And some of his wedge play was absolutely stellar. So he's right. He's focusing on the right things. And it must be nice, Jack, that his last memory of being at the venue for this year's Open, he ran top 10.
Yeah, it certainly can't hurt. I think it's going to be a completely different beast this time around. I think we can guarantee that. But it certainly can't hurt to have that on your record and have a bit of extra confidence, a bit of kind of history with the golf course. We've seen, you know, you look on a bigger scale, someone like Tiger Woods, who's gone back to Bay Hill and won there eight times. You know, it's kind of horses for courses, isn't it, in golf? There are courses, as Paul just said, that do really fit your eye. So, yeah, it's got to be encouraging for him and his chances.
Must give a big thumbs up to Paul McGinley as well for pulling the whole thing together.
Yeah, for sure. particularly over the weekend, the crowds were just absolutely incredible. And get a course like Le Hinch on the world stage, it fully deserves to be there. So, yeah, it was a glorious week.
I can tell you that Paul works for us on Sky and he's like a Duracell bunny. He puts new batteries in every day and he just goes and goes and goes, Paul. He's got unbelievable energy levels. And in amongst all his commentating rota, he was doing Irish Open stuff, trying to get players to come over. It was quite the operation to eventually pull it all together. So, you know, it looks smooth when you turn up on the Monday of the week and everything's there in place, but to actually get everything sorted that it's going to be there as you want it on a given week takes an awful lot of work. So he and his team did a great job, no doubt about that. Martin Kaymer and Eduardo Molinari had good weeks, and a nice one for Eduardo Molinari.
I was more interested in Martin Kaymer there. I thought it was a...
Well, you could completely diss Molinari if you want and go straight on to go and do Kaymer.
Exactly what I'm doing.
I can see that.
I was very pleased to see his comeback, you know, tied ninth, really good. And I'm putting him down for over the next couple of weeks to having some real strong finishes.
He's got to go well next week because he's on this run of consecutive majors played.
That's correct.
And if he, doesn't get one of the spots this week, then he does. So I can't remember how many spots are available at the Scottish.
It's three.
So, yeah, if he doesn't get one of those spots, then that'll be the end of his major run. And he's the sort of player, Kaymer, who we've seen it several times in the past. He could just come from nowhere and play brilliant, brilliant golf. The way he tore apart Pinehurst and won the Players in 2014.
Went by 8 shots, didn't
he? Yeah, it was just a complete exhibition. And it was kind of out of nowhere. That was off the back of the Players, but the win at the Players was out of nowhere. He'd had absolutely no form going into that.
Yeah.
So, he's the sort of player who, if he just gets himself a place in the field, I don't necessarily...
think he's trending in a good direction now, though.
Yeah.
Very much
it's,
so,
it's taken a bit of time, and now he's starting to trend and get up there and get the smell, the whiff of rarefied air. And there's nothing like it in golf when you get yourself into contention on the Sunday. There's nothing that's more fun than that, no doubt about that. And Eduardo Molinari will be desperate to play well at the Scottish to get in where his brother defends.
Yeah, definitely. An amazing experience to be a part of that week with Francesco alongside him. So, yeah, no, I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to get there. And, he's got one more chance to really kind of, to find that spot.
It's difficult, though, isn't it?
But there's going to be so many players. We've spoken about this, just spoken to Paul about it. You know, it's a big motivation for these players to get there, and there are going to be an incredible host of players there and a fantastic field at the Scottish Open, all desperate to get that spot.
Top 10 then in the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Big tie for ninth. Eduardo Molinari, who narrowly missed an eagle putt in the last. Mike Lorenzo Vera, who qualified because he played so well at Valderrama for the Open. Xander Lombard, ninth. Martin Kaymer, ninth. Gavin Green from Malaysia, he was ninth. Then a tie for seventh. Jorge Campillo and Paul Waring, who we spoke to on the show. Three players tied for fourth. Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Eddie Pepperell and Robert Roch. In second spot was Bernd Wiesberger and Andy Sullivan. And John Rahm wins his second Irish Open with a total of 16 under par. Now, last week's predictions, just a reminder of the format. You get two picks. One has got to be from outside last year's top 50 in the race to Dubai, or anyone else that you think could win the tournament. 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. I went for Shane Lowry and Victor Dubuisson. Victor missed the cut, Shane Lowry 34th, so I was minus 5 points. Richard Boxall went for Tyrrell Hatton and Guido Migliozzi. Both of them missed the cut, so that's minus 10 points for the guest. And Kit, big boots for you to fill, went for John Rahm, 20 points, and Alvaro Quiroz, missed cut, minus 5. So overall, the presenters are reduced to 155, co-presenters down to 65, guests are now up to 50. In the fancy race to Dubai game, Lee Finley with his team 247 Discount Golf, that can't possibly be a business, is top of the pile with 20,015 points. Meanwhile, this week's best performance came from Michael Crawford, who picked up 3,697 points, thanks to a team that contained John Rahm, Bernd Wiesberger and Andy Sullivan. If you want to get involved, you can by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Top 10 in the race to Dubai. In first spot because of his win at the Irish Open is John Rahm. Matt Wallace is second. Shane Lowry third. Kevin Kisner fourth. Jorge Campillo is fifth. Louis Oosthuizen is sixth. Bernd Wiesberger seventh. A lot of Scrabble points here with these surnames. Xander Schauffele, maybe the top of the winners in the Scrabble points, is eighth. Justin Harding ninth. And Ian Poulter rounds out the top 10. On the Challenge Tour, which was in Slovakia, which had a par 6 on it, a hole that measured 780 yards, par 6.
That's not the... I've heard of another par 6, but come on.
No, In that, South Korea, there's a course with an 1,100-yard hole, which is a par 7.
You're joking.
I am not joking. Oh. There's one in Japan as well, which is shorter. That's in the 900s. That's a par 7.
Oh, God.
Imagine playing a par 7.
Oh, yeah.
But if you break it down and the hole's quite tight, I mean, you hit a straight tee shot. How many shots to get to the green?
Yeah.
I mean, four shots of 250 yards gets you 1,000 yards. So if you bust it 300, you're not going to get there in three.
It's weird hitting four shots. Good shots, and you're not actually on the green.
To an 1,100-yard hole, that's going
to...
Yeah.
That's weird. I'd like to go and play that, just to see what it was like. I suppose it was just play two par fours in a row.
I don't think there's a ceiling. I mean, some of them might have a par eight.
You're saying there is not a ceiling for how long a hole can play and what the number is you're meant to achieve at the end.
No?
Blimey.
Well, you need some real estate to put an 1,100-yard hole in, don't you?
Yeah.
I think there's room for... something a little bit outside the box. And that was the case at the Slovakia Challenge. Rhys Enoch ended a 7-year wait for a European Challenge Tour title at the D plus D Real Slovakia Challenge after posting a 4-under-par round of 68 in the final day, including playing that par 6 very well, at Penaty Golf Resort. The Welshman carded four consecutive sub-70 rounds to post an 18-under-par total and secure a one-shot victory over New Zealand's Josh Geary. Isn't that a great story after... going and going and going and going, and eventually you get the breakthrough.
Yeah, and he played at Pebble Beach the other week as well, I think, right. And had a good showing, made the cut. So, it's nice to see someone kind of riding that crest of the wave.
You'll know about this, the Stayshore Tour, the Swiss Senior Open. Jose Caceres won his first Stayshore Tour title at the Swiss Seniors, carding just two bogeys in 54 holes as he secured a two-stroke victory at Golf Club Bad Ragaz. That's a very good week. Everyone seems to enjoy that week.
I was there, Robert. 71, 72, 72.
Oh, that's not...
It's not bad.
Well, it's
not
good.
Bad, but when they're... What did the 16 under?
66, 65 and 68. So those were three scores.
Yeah, so it's quite a tight golf course. So anything offline, you're in the trees. Greens undulating, but good win.
Now, on the PGA Tour, and I was doing this last night at Sky, PGA Tour winner Matthew Wolff, or Matt Wolff, 20 years of age, only playing in his fourth or fifth event as a pro, won the 3M Open, and the style he won it in was incredible. On the Saturday, he had a chance to shoot 59, he posted 62 in the end, and he had to eagle the last hole to pit Bryson DeChambeau, who in front of him had just eagled the last hole, and he hit a 3-wood that was just over 300 yards. He had 225 to go, 5-iron over water to the edge of the green and hold probably a 25-footer for an eagle 3. It was the most amazing win. You must have watched it last night.
Yeah, it's probably the best event, end to an event on any tour over the last few months, I'd argue, which you wouldn't expect maybe from a new event, from a kind of a new venue. It's kind of it's not an event you kind of get drawn to as a spectator, but it was completely spectacular.
Compelling, wasn't it?
Oh, phenomenal. Just everything about it, like Colin Morikawa,
fantastic.
Another really young guy, kind of making his first steps out on tour without full kind of playing rights secured yet. He played fantastically after a rocky start. He came right back into it. There were so many players within just a couple of shots of the lead all the way through the final round.
Morikawa played the golf of the back nine, really.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he looked lost at sea in the first few
shot,
holes.
Was it 30 on the back nine?
He was fantastic.
Phenomenal performance and didn't win. And also Bryson DeChambeau, who kind of went along quite quietly. He was, you know, the kind of the class of the field, the standout player in the field, arguably. But in the final round, he was kind of pretty understated until 18, where he hit probably the shot of the week to set up his own eagle.
In the coverage, you just saw Bryson DeChambeau bend the 6-iron in from over 200 yards to within 6 feet of the hole.
Huge.
He probably drew it 50 feet, probably drew it right to left.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And straight after that, the telecast went to, and the shot of the day is like a bog standard Brian Harman wedge shot in somewhere. It was unbelievable after seeing that.
Yeah, and I thought the Brian Harman wedge shot was going to go in. I was like, surely that's got to...
No context, run-of-the-mill wedge shot that finished a couple of inches away. That was the shot of the day. Straight off the back of Bryson DeChambeau's worldie.
And that's obviously the host broadcaster's responsibility for that. And it's,
a
bizarre editorial. I know they've probably been queuing it up for a while.
I know, but we're in the shooter going,
decision.
What?
Yeah.
What?
And but it was an incredible shot from Bryson, taken away from it. A wonderful shot.
No, a tremendous win from Matthew Wolff, who, by the way, now is the needle mover.
He is
what Rory McIlroy was. He is the needle mover. A fantastic week. And Matt Wolff, remember the name. And we were saying last night on Sky, you got Tiger, Golden Bear, Shark, the Walrus, the Hawk. They've all got names.
They've all got a name.
It's there. It's already there. The Wolf. Yeah.
And they were howling, weren't they?
They were howling. Ooh. Absolutely right. They were howling, yeah. Top 10 in the world. I have it here. Brooks Koepka is the world number one. Dustin Johnson, number two, is big buddy. Rory's number three. Justin Rose, number four. Tiger's at 5. Bryson DeChambeau, now 6th. Francesco Molinari is 7th, John Rahm up to 8th, Justin Thomas 9th, and Patrick Cantlay is 10th. Xander Schauffele, who's still very underrated, a brilliant player, outside at number 11. Gary Woodland, 12, after his win at the US Open at Pebble Beach. So, looking ahead to this week on the European Tour, it's another biggie. It's the middle leg of a three-week link swing, and it's the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open, Jack, and there's a really good field.
Yeah, a great field. A course we don't know a great deal about. It's a relatively new course. Hasn't had a lot of tournament golf played there. But yeah, I mean, the likes of McIlroy teeing it up, it's gonna draw the crowds for sure. And Justin Thomas, Matt Kuchar, Ricky Fowler all coming over from the PGA Tour, which really helps boost the European Tour's profile. And yeah, no surprise, the week before the Open Championship, that they're looking to sharpen up the links game.
Renaissance Club in North Berwick, Gordon. What have you heard about it?
It's maybe not as linksy as we think. It's a little bit...
Not as linksy as we think, see?
We think, see. Yeah. It's a little bit insideys, the seas.
It's you not can't quite actually see the sea, can
no, you?
No, you
can't actually see
unless
the sea.
You're very
but
tall.
It's right next to Archie Field.
Archie Field.
It's a lovely venue. I don't think the golf course is maybe as strong as they think it's going to be, but I mean, a stellar field here. They're all coming. Ernie Els, Graham McDowell, Martin Kaymer, who I think is going to be one of the hot...
Is he going to be one of your tips?
Hot men this week.
Yeah.
But he's
playing well.
The Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open is always massive. They've had massive crowds and they've got a fantastic field as well. It'd be interesting to see how they deal with the Renaissance.
Anyone else catch your eye there, Jack?
I think someone like Lee Westwood will be desperate to secure a place at the Open Championship. I think there's another name that jumps out. You look at Lucas Bjerregaard. He's had some fantastic performances over the last few months. Obviously won at the Dunhill last year on links golf courses across three excellent links golf courses. So yeah, he's another name that stands out to me. And it'd be interesting to see how Matt Wallace goes as well, who's obviously just been in incredible form for the last couple of years, really become one of the top talents in European golf. But yeah, he hasn't quite shone on the links golf course yet, but maybe this is the week where he's going to do that and kind of boost his confidence going into the Open Championship.
Rory McIlroy, who blew them away at the Canadian Open, but now comes into a two-week for him links swing. Does he come in as tournament favourite? For you. I'm not talking about what the bookies say, I'm saying for you.
Rory has this ability to disappoint and then to absolutely blow you away. Because if he turns up and it's all on, then that's the end of the tournament. There's not many guys in a field, winning certainly in a strong field, that can actually do that. And then sometimes you go out and watch Rory and you go, what are you doing? It's not firing. He looks lackluster. He plays poor golf shots. He makes basic errors that you would think...
Course management errors, you mean? You
would have thought that would have been eradicated by this length of time as a professional golfer. But any time you see Rory McIlroy, he's got to be top of the tree and one of the five guys you think are going to win it. And if he turns up, it's all over.
What is Rory's X factor, Jack?
The driving, I think, is the standout, isn't it? He often struggles homing in on those kind of wedge distances, and the putting can be streaky, but it's very unfair to call him a bad putter. He, at his best, is an insanely good putter. He's one of these people who can, like, you called it an X factor there. It's the whole thing is that that's indefinable, right? You look at someone like Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, they're players, and Rory comes into that category. They can put the ball into the hole at any point, at any time around, whether they're 150 yards back down the fairway, whether they're in the fringe, in the bunker, or whether they're 35 foot away on the green. They're just, special, special talent.
So picks-wise, Gordon, who are you going to have this week?
My first pick is Martin Kaymer.
Very good.
Ninth last week. My second pick is David Drysdale, just homeboy. And he tends to have times when he just gets on a little bit of a roll, and a very gutsy player, and I think I would like to see the Scottish influence.
You've gone Scotland, haven't you?
I've gone Scotland.
And that's fine, so you should.
Yeah, I just hope he doesn't wear a kilt on the last day.
As a sort of plastic jock, you should do that.
So David Drysdale is my pick.
And Jack, yourself?
My top tip's going to be Eddie Pepperell this week. Obviously fell really flat in that final round in Ireland. It was a bit disappointing, but he's a fantastic links player. He's finished inside the top six in his last four European Tour events on British and Irish links courses, including the Hillside.
He's had back issues. He's back to feeling strong again, so that's important for him.
Yeah, he absolutely loves the links. We saw that at the Open last year as well, before he finished sixth. So, Eddie's my man. And then my outside the race to buy top 50 from last year pick would be Matt Kuchar. feature, which is a bit of a cheeky one because obviously he doesn't play a lot of European Tour events, but did play 10 times on the European Tour last year. I think he was 62nd.
I smelt a rat earlier on when you said, well, I wonder what, I just knew there was a rat coming, and there it is.
Two wins on the PGA Tour
in its glory,
season,
yeah. So. Well, it's two strong picks, that is for sure.
Yeah, but certainly, really, I'm not sure.
You're not happy with that,
Gordon,
are you?
I'm not happy about that. That's not the name we expect as a second pick.
I'll throw another one in the mix then. Yeah. Chris Paisley is another man.
That's more like it.
No
points there. No points there.
Geordie, he will have experienced quite a lot of kind of golf in adverse conditions.
Good ball striker. He's very controlled the way he plays.
Really tidy golf swing. Really, really tidy golf swing.
Just to establish, is Kuchar in or out?
Yeah. It's Matt Kuchar.
Chris, Jack loves you a lot as a player, but he's gone for Matt Kuchar ahead of you. That's not very nice. I'm going to go for... We were asked at the start of the year in January... first podcast of the year to predict the four major winners, and I picked Ricky Fowler in January, and I'm sticking with Ricky Fowler because I think particularly if the weather gets horrible, he's got a lot of different golf shots which some of the other players don't have. So I'm going to go for Ricky Fowler for the Open, but I'm going to go for Ricky Fowler this week at the Scottish.
So he's going to win back-to-back then, is he?
That's right.
Excellent.
That's right.
Won the Scottish before, of course.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah,
beautiful sandwich at the last, about a foot, and took care of that. So Lynx golf fits him very well. Ricky Fowler. And my second pick, I'm going to pick out Bobby McIntyre. He nearly won at Hillside. He was featuring here at the start of the week in Ireland, and I think he looks like a really good young player. So I'm going for a Scot in Scotland. You like that?
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's it for now. Next week, we'll have a full review of the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open. Plus, we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour. And it's the big one, the 148th Open Championship. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. But for now, from Jack Hayward, who's gone for?
Matt Kuchar as my second pick, and it was Eddie Pepple.
Well done. Well, snaffled out. Every week that catches people out. You did very well. Good trial. And Gordon, you've gone for?
Keimer as my first pick, and David Drysdale, the local favourite.
And I've gone for Bobby McIntyre, waving the sole tire successfully into the week, just one shot behind Ricky Fowler. Until then, we'll see you next time.